Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Kate Loving and the Collective Wisdom. My name is Kate Loving Schenck of katelovingschenck.com, and I am the host of this show. Michael R. Collins is my guest this evening, author of the upcoming book, Ushering in the Golden Age. The book will be published very soon, and Michael will tell us exactly when that will be. The call-in number is 347-205-9200. Joining me now is Michael. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Kate. How are you today?
I am great. I actually wrote a blog post today about, you know, your book and you. I'm just going to draw this, put this up here before me. And it actually is a prayer, but because it becomes more like, you know, an inquiry, some of these prayers. So. Yeah. I just wanted to say that have you ever thought about the Golden Age as utopia?
Yes, in many ways it's utopia, because when we start to collectively realize ourselves as citizens on the planet, we will create a utopia. When we start to realize that we're spiritual beings, and, you know, transcend this humanness that becomes our alibis and excuses for not living to our full potential.
Yes. Well, I mean, I actually got the idea as I was reading your book that it is totally possible to live a utopian vision, and that we can do this, but I'm saying that there is a lot of work to be done, really. People seem to be living unconsciously, and you know, in many ways, it seems that, as you say, there's a lot of excuses that that take place with people, and certainly our only responsibility is with ourselves. So we have to change ourselves in the way we think. And you use the example of wordsmithing quite a lot, which I find to be so interesting. And so tell us a little bit about wordsmithing and how, just by watching and not watching, but being more conscious of how we speak, that in and of itself can really do so much to change our reality.
Well, wordsmithing to me is very important, Kate, because the words that we choose actually create our reality. The words that we choose and the thoughts that then come from those words really create our world. So when we become conscious of the words we use, we actually start to shift our environment and shift our vibration. Because the subconscious, I'm going to give an example. Let's take the word nonviolent.
Yes.
When we say nonviolent, many people think that we're talking about stopping violence, but the subconscious hears violence. So
yes.
Actually, we're programming ourselves with violence.
That's right.
And it's the same thing, you know, because so many times in the quote-unquote New Age community, we hear the term unconditional love. So when we say unconditional, the subconscious hears conditional. And so when we're talking unconditional love, we're actually putting the first condition on love. And when we really look at love and see love as a force of nature, it's inherent in love. Love is loving. So we don't really need any adjectives or descriptions to describe love.
Right. Because love is.
Exactly. And this is why when we start to concentrate on our words and start to control our attention, then we really start to create the world that we want to have, and we create the peace that we want to have in our lives. So to get back to what you were saying about creating a utopian society, it all starts with one person.
Yeah.
And we're each responsible for ourselves. I talk about taking 100% responsibility. But the bottom line is, as each and every person starts to take 100% responsibility, that vibration goes to anybody who is not taking 100% responsibility. So by changing ourselves and changing our vibration, we're like a radio wave. So once somebody tunes into our frequency, if we are starting to tune into the higher consciousness, then people around us will feel that vibration and that naturally start to tune into that higher vibration. So as part of our responsibility, when we take 100% responsibility, we're actually empowering the world when we empower ourselves.
Yes, that is so true. I guess I don't have to mention those experiments that were done with the Maharishi, where when people would meditate in a very troubled area, that it would rise. It would raise all the vibrations of that area. And everybody, there was a noticeable drop in violence, violent behavior, violent crime. That's very interesting.
Yes, and you know, Kate, we have all this information at our fingertips, and yet so many times we don't apply it to our lives. And, you know, one of the things I just want to say in the beginning of the conversation is so many times people look at books and they'll look at, you know, looking at my book, and they'll say, well, it's very intellectual. And yes, on one level it is intellectual, but if you take what's in the book and apply it, then you would say the book is very practical. And when we start to look at things from the practicality of it, of applying it, of changing your thoughts, of changing the direction you're going in, taking responsibility, not blaming somebody or playing the victim, then all of a sudden your life shifts.
Yes, immediately. It's like a change in perception, you know.
Yes.
Just from to love, changing your perception to love is an automatic shift. And it, which the Course in Miracles calls a miracle.
Yes.
A shift in perception.
Well, Kate, one of the things that, you know, I've incorporated in the book, and you know this, is, you know, after the chapter on wordsmithing, I have a chapter on practical spirituality and using spirituality in everyday life.
Yes.
But part of that is, in that chapter, there is a chart called the Cousins of Love.
Yes.
And if one would just concentrate on that chart and change their vocabulary to reflect the cousins of love, all of a sudden they would find that their interactions with people and situations in their life would change. Because when you start to use words that are synonyms of love and reflect the love, people then feel that higher vibration. And so as we work towards elevating our consciousness and changing the consciousness of the planet, just a simple thing like that of using vocabulary that reflects loving in any situation, so that even though a situation may be terse or tense, if we use words of love, it will help to bridge the differences and create more understanding.
Yes. And I'm trying to get to that page where all those words are. Because we could just go through that. And how long did it take you to write this book, Michael?
Well, I started this book in October of last year.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's taken me about a year to write it.
Right.
You know,
yes.
With all the edits and you know, the different changes and adding things into the book. And, you know, as I was writing the book, my consciousness was shifting. You know,
yes.
Infinite Spirit was giving me more information to put into the book and,
yes,
you know, learning to make things clearer so that people can understand it, so people can practically apply this information to their life instantaneously.
Mm-hmm. So you really get the feeling, as you said, here's another wordsmithing example, that no one is ever alone, that in within the word alone is the word all one. That's pretty cool.
Right, and you know, we are all one, because one of the things that I talk about in Shifting Consciousness is the realization that we are all spiritual beings.
Yes.
That each and every one of us has a spark of the divine in us. And when we start to realize that spark of the divine, you know, in Indian culture, it's called, you know, raising the Kundalini, or it's called raising the Christ consciousness. But it's really raising our consciousness where we really start to live the bliss of love. And when we start to live the bliss and the joy of love, then our whole relationship to life changes. When we see love as a force of nature, as opposed to seeing love as an emotion, you know, we get involved in relationships or different ways of describing food or what have you, and we say, I love this, I don't love that. But when we make love a force of nature, then all of a sudden we are allowing our own love, our own heart, to flow just like the energy of nature flows. So we're actually becoming one and harmonizing ourselves with nature.
Right. So you call these words that have to do with love as cousins of love.
Yes.
And so I'm going to just go through some of these. Condolences. You know, when you are giving your condolences, you're certainly extending a compassionate,
your sympathy,
loving.
you're realizing of somebody else's pain in that moment and being able to understand that, you know, part of it's part of the human condition and we all go through it.
Yes, we do.
And that would then lead into a word like compassion.
Yes.
You know, with passion for somebody, you know, with that love, because, you know, I always feel that it's a responsibility as we study and more to give back and to share this knowledge so that we can end the suffering and the misery on earth. Because we do know that love heals and cures everything. So if we can get and learn to understand all situations from a standpoint of love, then again, we then start to change that vibration. And when we start to change our vibration, what it does is it gives people the opportunity to tune into that vibration and change their world. You know, the bottom line is they don't have to know how they're changing it. The bottom line is that the change is being made and that more people are standing up for love and the conviction of their heart and talking to their heart, as opposed to, you know, we live in a world where most things are dominated by money and the competition for money. But that actually goes against our nature. It goes against our nature as spiritual beings.
It shuts people down.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's nothing wrong with money, but when it becomes a thing of greed, then it does really shut down your energy systems.
Right, and let's take it one step further. Even beyond the greed, with so many times money is done, things are done to make money that curtail the benefits of the planet. And one of the things that I talk about in the book is we had this amazing inventor, Mr. Nikola Tesla, who actually created the Tesla Tower out in Shoreham, New York. And with this tower, basically the whole East Coast would have been able to have free electricity. And if we put five of these towers up in the United States, the whole country would have been able to have free electricity. Now,
yes.
J.P. Morgan, who was financing this project, because he could not put a meter on the tower and charge people for the electricity, actually tore down this tower. So, again, this is going on beyond greed, because I feel that as we have knowledge and we share this knowledge, think if we had free electricity for everyone, we would not be in the energy crisis that we are in now. Number two, people would not be spending all this money for energy. So basically they would have more money to, you know, hopefully put into self-development and also more leisure time, more time to spend with their families. But that's what I mean by going beyond greed. When things are done that, you know, curtail the betterment of life on Earth, then, you know, then I have a whole bunch of questions about that.
Yeah, that becomes, as one of my guests a few weeks ago would call, an ethical dilemma. I mean, it becomes a question of ethics. And the same could be said for the powers that be in medicine. I guess it would really be the FDA, would wreck. His name is Stanislav Brzezinski, had a clinic, and still does have a clinic in Houston, Texas, where he has an actual cure for cancer. And the FDA routinely goes in and shuts him down and takes him to court. I have no idea why Dr. Brzezinski doesn't go to practice his medicine in Mexico, where he would be well received. But I guess he's quite a fighter. And there's been a film made about it. And he's not the only person with a cure for cancer that has had the FDA and the powers that be, the AMA, big pharmaceutical companies, try to destroy it. So that's an ethical breach.
Exactly.
When people are really trying to, like you said, you know, better the world with these inventions, where if we could cure cancer, that would be certainly a lot of less pain and suffering that people would have to go through.
One of the things, you know, that I think that's very important with this, in, you know, I have a chapter about taking your power back in the book. And one of the things I think is very important is sometimes we give our power, you know, you just mentioned the FDA, but we are the citizens of this country, and it's time that we start voicing ourselves.
Yes.
If there are things that we don't like, instead of blaming or becoming the victim, it's time to take 100% responsibility and then start to create things to make changes. And that, you know, somebody who may be listening to this call, that may be their purpose. Or somebody may have a conversation with somebody, and that may be their purpose. And when we start to realize our purpose, when we start to realize our calling, because so many times with our purpose, it's our vocation. And vocation means calling. And our calling is what our intuition is actually telling us to do with our lives. It is our purpose in life. It is our burning desire. It is the fabric of our DNA. And when people start to take their power and start to put this information out, look into this information, and get other people involved, because once we stop living in our vacuums, you know, no man is an island. And so once we stop living in our vacuums, then we can go out and start making the changes, because nobody has power over us. Nobody has power over any individual's thoughts. And so collectively, if we see things that need to be changed and enough people have similar thoughts, then it's time to start working together and stop blaming and playing the victim.
Yes, that's right. And as you mentioned in your book, the word vocation is rooted in the word vocabulary. So a vocation is a way of expressing your destiny in this lifetime.
Right, and to actually the Latin meaning of it is calling. And
calling.
So
mm-hmm.
when we listen to our inner teacher, when we listen to our inner guide, when we listen to our intuition, we actually hear our calling and we hear our purpose in life. And so many times, you know, people don't take the time to hear that calling. They don't take the time. You know, we're caught up in work. We're caught up in different pressures, so-called pressures of life. And we
mm-hmm.
really don't take time for ourselves. And to me, that is one of the great tragedies, because when we start to find our calling is really what brings us joy. It's our purpose. It is our passion. And
mm-hmm.
when we start to do that and start to find that, then instead of work becoming a drudgery, we are enthused. We are enthused with the power to go out there and bring these projects to fruition. And when people start to realize that we can make this planet better, so that when we die or when we make our transition, we are actually leaving something better behind for our planet.
Yes.
And, you know, the idea for the title of the book, Ushering in
uh-huh.
the Golden Age, came from Nostradamus when he said that,
oh.
that we will have the Golden Age and peace will reign on Earth for 1,000 years, 1,000+ years.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in order for that to happen, we have to really start to shift our consciousness. We have to get into a higher consciousness. We have to get into a consciousness of spiritual beings and treating people from that point of view that we are spiritual beings, so that we're leading from the spirit and not from the physical, the mental, the emotional, but we're living from the spirit, which when we live from the spirit, the principles of spirit are all virtuous.
Yes. Which is another word for love.
Yes.
I was going to ask you, speaking of Brzezinski and the FDA wrecking his laboratory, I was going to ask you, now you were talking about love in the beginning of the program, if do you think that, you know, pure love, as you describe in your book, can be a cure for in so-called incurable cancer?
Yes. Well, as you know, I'm a student of Napoleon Hill.
Yes.
I've read some works by Robert Collier. And these gentlemen all talk about the power of the mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, you know, love is the premier principle in creating a positive mental attitude. And when we start to get into a state of love and loving, it has been proven that people have healed themselves from cancer, from various diseases, by just surrendering to love or demanding love to these cells, demanding that their subconscious takes it to infinite intelligence to heal these things. So it has been done. So the more that we get into love, because when we look at the body, when you know, it's either love or fear. They
yeah.
both, and you know, in Hindu tradition, they tell us that both love and fear reside in the heart. The only difference is when we love, it gets stronger in the heart. When
mm-hmm.
when we live in fear and the lower emotions, then it starts to move away from the heart. So when we have jealousy and hatred, we're actually moving away from our true nature. So
yes.
I do believe that mentally, if we start to focus our power in our mind, we can do anything with our mind. And many, you know, many experiments have been proven of the power of the mind. The government has used the power of the mind. So, you know, it is a well-known fact what people can do by concentrating their intention. But again,
yeah.
it's like anything else. It takes work. It takes
mm-hmm.
work to concentrate, to go in and meditate every day, to actually, when you are concentrating, listening to what comes up, listening to infinite intelligence, infinite spirit, and hear what is being told. Because when you hear what's being told, there may be little subtle adjustments that you need to make in your attitude, in your diet, in the way that you treat people, in the way that you live life, in the way that you treat yourself. So many mm-hmm. times, you know, we are taught that we have to work. But my question to people is, how many times have you called up a friend and asked them, can they come out and play?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we always have that childlike innocence, but yet we repress it. And when you call up and ask somebody if they can come out and play, all of a sudden it just brings you back into that childlike innocence and brings you into a joy and a new level of thought to heal yourself. So, yes, I do believe that we can use the mind to heal. And, Kate, if you don't mind, I'd like to just read a very...
Please do.
Excuse me?
Go ahead. Yeah.
I'd like to just read a very short thing from Napoleon Hill.
Go ahead.
Which I say every morning.
Mm-hmm.
I ask not divine providence for more riches. Nevertheless, for more wisdom... which with to accept and use wisely the riches I received at birth in the form
mm-hmm.
of power to control and direct my own mind to whatever ends I desire. And so many times when I do this, I substitute the word talent for riches because we are each got our own unique talent. And when the divine spark was put in each of us, we were each given these talents. And the richness of that is when we find that and give that and bring that to the world, it is such a joy because we're giving from the heart. And when you give from the heart without any conditions on it, just giving, it is the greatest joy that one knows. Well, mm-hmm. one of the greatest joys that one knows.
Yeah, that's true.
And so this is, you know, this prayer really reflects the idea that we have the power to use our minds to get whatever it is that we desire. So
mm-hmm.
when we start from a positive mental attitude, when we start with the cousins of love, we then have the ability to create whatever we want in the most positive way.
Yes. And as you said, there's a lot of concentration that needs to evolve as we, you know, as you do these practices. It's not necessarily hard work, but it might be different than what we're used to with all this technology, all the distractions. All of the different distractions with television,
right,
and the computer and all the handheld devices and so forth. So it's really important. It might be like an addiction to break some of these things,
right?
And then you can get deeper into the practice.
And the nice thing about most of the things that we can do to help realize ourselves, they're free by breathing, drinking good water, meditating, things
mm-hmm.
of that nature, yoga. You know, we can train ourselves to do these, going for walks, things that all change our vibration. So many of these things are free. You don't have to pay for them. You can do them at your leisure. So, you know, we have the ability. It's now just a matter of taking the time and realizing how important these things are to the formation of a life of spirit. Because
yes.
the breath, the inhalation, is about spirit. When we're taking in the breath and exhaling, we're bringing in exhaling spirit. And then spirit is the word that, you know, goes with inspiration. So when
mm-hmm.
we're breathing in and we're inspiring, you know, when we get rid of the data, when we get rid of the old memories, then we can allow thoughts of inspiration to come in.
So how do you practice Ho'oponopono? I know that you've mentioned it several times in your book. And it's really a beautiful practice. If you would explain what it is to our listeners and would be great.
Okay. Ho'oponopono is from Hawaii, and basically it talks about we either are creating data or inspiration. And so many times in lives, we just keep replaying over and over and over the same memories in our subconscious and basically not taking responsibility for those situations. And what Ho'oponopono says is to talk to those situations and basically say, I love you, please forgive me, thank you, I'm sorry. And you're actually talking to the data or talking to the situation. And so when you start to do that, the more that you do it, the more it brings you into a state of inspiration. And mm-hmm. once you get into a state of inspiration, then you're thinking new creative thoughts, and you're eliminating that data. And the thing is, so many times, you know, people may have had bad childhoods. They may have had traumatic experiences in their childhood. And so those situations then get replayed and replayed and replayed through life. And there is, you know, very few people make peace with that data, and they keep replaying that memory. And then that memory becomes the motivation for their actions in life. And so
yeah.
basically the negative experience, the traumatic experience, then becomes their point of view. So it could be fearful, it could be, you know, violent, it could be hatred, it could be isolation, it could be not feeling good enough. And by saying and talking to that data and saying, I love you, please forgive me, I'm sorry, thank you, then you start to change and raise the vibration of that data until that data and that memory starts to dissipate. And once that starts to dissipate, then new thoughts of inspiration and trust can come in, because
mm-hmm.
because then you are open for that, because in that moment that old dominating thoughts are no longer there.
I thought it was very interesting to read the account of Dr. Hugh Len when he, he was working with lots of very sick, psychiatrically sick people, and instead of thinking that the problem was in them, he actually worked on things that arose within him, the data, the memory that was arising within him, and then he would use the cleaning techniques, like, you know, the phrases that you just mentioned,
right,
to help himself, to the things that were coming up within himself, he would clear. And then it raised the vibrations of the whole institution.
Right. And, Kate, that's a very important point in illustrating taking 100% responsibility. If
yes.
somebody comes to your doorstep with a problem, that means that you are vibrating with that problem, and that
yes.
that problem or that situation is within you. So instead of looking at the other person and feeling that they're a victim or whatever, Dr. Hugh Len saw whatever was in him was in him. And so at the Hawaiian prison, there were the most heinous criminals in Hawaii there. There were murderers, rapists. We can go down the line. I don't want to put all that other negativity out there.
Yeah.
But Dr. Hugh Len, you know, said to himself, well, what inside of me would make me want to murder somebody?
Mm-hmm.
What inside
mm-hmm.
of me would make me want to rape somebody? And then started to clear it out within him. And by changing that vibration within himself, it started to affect the prisoners, because they would feel that vibration. And so, as the story is told, Dr. Hugh Len never met with any of the prisoners.
Yeah,
but
that's right.
But the bottom line is that, and I want to use a number, and don't hold me to the number, but I would say I think it was between 10 and 15 years. After 10 or 15 years, they had to close down the prison because all these heinous criminals had basically transformed their consciousness.
That's just a miracle.
It's not a miracle. It's when we start to use the laws of nature and laws of the power of the mind, we can move mountains. The
yes.
thing, the things that look as obstacles to us today will no longer be obstacles tomorrow or
yes.
in this moment, because when we shift our consciousness in our moment, they will no longer be obstacles in this moment.
Right, and that would be very much the principles of Napoleon Hill and the things that you've been studying more lately.
Well,
Well,
any of the great avatars always
yes.
tapped into the archetype. Like if, you know, I studied, you know, Kriya Yoga, the Kriya Yoga of Babaji.
Yes.
Who was the
mm-hmm.
teacher of Yogananda. And, you know, he had one commandment, love
mm-hmm.
everybody. You know, it's just that simple. And then, you know, from doing work with Lester Levinson, I just updated that one commandment even to take it to another level. Love everybody equally.
Mm.
You know, and this is written in the Hu Ha Chen by Lao Taos, which is the other book, the companion book to the Tao. He says, be loving to those who deserve it, but be equally loving to those who don't deserve it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so when we stop our judgment and allow the flow of love, again, you know, people will receive that vibration, and their lives will start to change. Because when you, you know, one of the things that Lester did is he had to bring a large sum of money across town, and he looked at who was the most criminal type behavior person in the room, and had gave them this large sum of money in cash to bring across town.
Mm-hmm.
And by giving people that trust, it bolsters their self-esteem. And so many times we look on people who may have done something negative in their past, and we keep that judgment and never give them the opportunity to redeem themselves. And so many times people are looking for that opportunity to redeem themselves and looking for somebody to bring out that goodness and talk to that goodness that resides in their heart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think when you place trust in the people, like you just, that example, it's very powerful, really.
Right. And, you know, to quote Nietzsche, and I quote him through the book,
mm-hmm.
where there is no trust, there is no love. And let's break down that statement for a minute. You
mm-hmm.
know, I could say I love you, I love you, I love you, but if I don't trust you, then inherently there really isn't any love there. Because if I trust you, then that love is going to just be a reciprocal of that. And it'll be a flow of that. And so if we don't trust somebody, if we don't give them trust, they automatically feel that vibration, that non-love vibration.
Right.
And you like that I use non-love, because when we use non-love, that's one of the keys in wordsmithing. Instead of saying all the other negative emotions, just say non-love feelings. And people are still hearing love.
I like that. So you've been practicing that for a long time then, you know, choosing your words carefully.
Yes, I even put together a CD with my cousin, Paul Fraser, who's a musician. He's played with people like Talking Head and just a who's who of musicians. He did the music for the CD, and I actually wordsmithed the CD about loving and letting go. All non-love feelings.
Oh, that's really, really neat.
Yes, I have a 27-minute meditation on just a wordsmith meditation where everything in there is positive.
That sounds like a great one. You have Do you have that up on your website for sale? And what is your website?
www.michaelrobincollins.com. Yes, I have it up on my website, and people can also hear a little sample of it up on the website also.
And Robin is spelt with one B?
Yes.
I know that. Let's see, I was thinking about a lot of times in our when people are talking to each other and just everyday in the everyday world, instead of saying, people will say no problem or no worries, and of course they're hearing the word problem and worries, and so you had suggested to me, and I'd like to tell our listeners that Michael and I and several others are in a mastermind together, which is of course a Napoleon Hill concept. And anyway, you had said on one of the calls that instead of saying no worries, no problems, to say divine order, divine order. That's so cool.
Yeah, everything is in divine order.
Yeah, yeah. And so I've been practicing that because to keep saying no problems, no worries has been a habit that I have. And the way that we say certain things becomes a habit. So
let's flip the script. And let me ask you the question. After saying everything is in divine order, how do you feel now?
Much better.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like a much, it just puts things to rest, I'd say, or makes people feel more peaceful.
Yeah, and it's also, the bottom line is it's also putting people in harmony with their true nature.
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
everything is in divine order. And it's
yes.
when we start to realize that divine spark within ourselves, when we realize that soul, that psyche that is within us, it just changes our whole outlook to life.
Yes.
And,
there's
just
probably a million examples of how we can change the way we speak.
Exactly. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, this just sparked me to want to say is, you know, in the first chapter, you know, I talk about religion and health. And when we look into the etymology of the word religion, it means to bind the parts together to make whole.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what health is all about. So when we look at religion as a psychological process, in order to make ourselves whole, we don't have to give our power over to any churches or anything like that. The wholeness is within us. We each have a divine spark. We each have our own intuition. So we don't need any other man or woman to intercede for us with God, infinite in spirit, infinite intelligence, whatever you want to call it. We have
mm-hmm.
we have the mechanisms within. And when we start to realize that that is part of the psychological process of realization and wholeness, then it really starts to shift our whole way of looking at that and the way that we start to empower ourselves as opposed to empowering forces outside of them and waiting for their judgment and their protocol. And so many times the protocol doesn't make sense, and so many times, more importantly, the protocol goes against nature.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And these are very old. People might think this is a sort of a New Age concept, so-called New Age concept, but it really does go very, very far back. Like you said, with the avatars and Babaji is an ageless entity. the fact is that to have a spiritual realization, we don't need gurus and we don't need ministers and we don't need priests, you know, or bishops, that we have all of this within ourselves.
Right.
But
right.
the trick would be to trust in yourself enough to believe this and to operate from that power.
Right, and that's why it's so important to really learn how to take your power back and to get in tune with that power. Because, again, you know, when we start to learn to think accurately and we start to question everything that's out there, and when we start to question it, certain things in life don't make sense. Mm-hmm. You know, we live in a world that is abundant. The
yes.
infinite spirit has put so much abundance here on Earth. And one of the things I talk about, just a little quick segue, Earth has the same vibration as heart. It's the exact same letters.
Yes.
And so we have this abundance on Earth, but so many people have this lack mentality. And mm-hmm. so many times we live in this poverty consciousness of fear where there's not enough and nobody will have enough and there won't be enough. And we go against our God-given nature. And
mm-hmm.
so then we create this worry and this anxiety and this angst where we have to learn to share and to help everybody to realize this abundance. And, you know, this is part of, for me, what living in the golden age is a realization mm-hmm. of the consciousness of spirit, so we don't have to live in this fear.
Right. And the golden age is really, so I was wondering if you thought that we could realize the golden age in our lifetime, but I suppose you could do it right now, right here and right now. It doesn't have, you don't have to wait for it.
That's right. We could realize the golden age right in this moment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And as more people tune into this consciousness, the
which
quicker
they are, you
yes,
know, they
the,
are.
The quicker we will bring this consciousness to the world and shift the whole consciousness of the planet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this was a big reason why I felt it so important to write the book, because I know that there are ideas in the book that are going to shift people's consciousness and make them feel elevated instantly.
Yeah, because I feel like as I was reading the book, it reminded me of a gospel of love.
Right.
Very much so. Yes. And it does immediately raise your consciousness. And, you know, I think that, you know, what you've done there is really a gift to the world. And I think that there are so many people writing, you know, doing writing that is a great contribution in this time. And maybe it is a transformational kind of genre that's emerging. And it's just a beautiful thing to think that the golden age is right here, right now, and we don't have to wait for it to come. We don't have to think, well, this will never happen in my lifetime. Well, why not? Because it already is happening.
It is. And it's just a matter of changing your thoughts and realizing it for yourself, and then everybody you come in contact with will feel that vibration. We've just got to get, we need to have more people just tap into it.
Right.
And raise their vibration. And you know, so many people say, you know, the world and the way we live doesn't make sense. So many people see so many atrocities and their hearts are torn out. It doesn't have to be that way. And when I say we, I mean each individually
mm-hmm.
has the power to make that transformation.
Now, did you have a spiritual awakening, a personal experience that led you in this direction?
Yeah, when the doctor smacked me on my butt.
That's funny.
No, just when in my senior year of college, I was walking and I had the thought, I had not studied astrology at the time, but I had the thought that everybody had every planet and sign within them.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I got home to New York, I met Mr. Salton Mason, who basically transformed my life.
Is that an astrologer?
Yes. And
I've heard of him, yeah.
Yeah, he taught me how to decipher the archetype. And so, you know, there were many things that he taught to us that weren't put in books and that have been handed down, you know, in the oral tradition. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even when I was studying him, I didn't realize the power of that, but I realized what a great gift I was given from the oral tradition. And, you know, so many times, you know, I can just look at the archetype and decipher so many answers that I need, or so many mm-hmm. answers to situations. And so it's been a great blessing.
Oh my gosh, I bet. And the archetypes are very important, aren't they, in our
yes.
lives?
Yes, because the more that we understand and can decipher the archetypes, the more we're going to learn about nature
mm-hmm.
and the operation of nature. And, I mean, when we start to do that, as opposed to, as we see it now, so many things we're trying to do is to control nature.
Yeah.
When we get into the flow with nature, then it automatically shifts up. And so our whole thing is the need to get into that flow and stop trying to control nature, because as you know, when you try to control anything, what happens is you become out of control.
So and that's the truth.
We need to really start to harmonizing ourselves and find ways to create a creative harmony with nature, as opposed to trying to control nature.
Yes, and we certainly can study the the Aborigine cultures, or, you know, the native cultures, to figure out how to do that, because the culture, especially the American culture, has gotten way, way, way removed from that.
Right, and I agree with you that to study the other cultures, but I also want to say we need to find ways to incorporate this into our culture and make shifts so that our culture, now with all the technology, still is working in harmony with nature.
Yes, we do. And we have to get off the oil grid and cut our dependence on oil and think of very creative ways of doing it. And I think that we can't blame the corporations for everything. We have to take a stand.
We have to take responsibility.
Which is why the Occupy movement is so important right now, because it has galvanized people's passions and people realize they do have the power to make good in the world, and all the spotlights on the environment.
Right, and the bottom line with that mm-hmm. is people are taking action.
Yeah, action is really important.
And, you know, so many times people complain to themselves, muttering under their breath, complaining to their friends. But in order to make change and to change the vibration, we have to take action. We have to change the radio dial. It's the same thing with raising consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
We have to take the action and say, okay, this thought is a better thought. This thought is more loving. And allow those non-love feelings to dissipate. And use those and transmute that energy of non-love feelings. Because there is power in that, but if we learn
yes.
how to transmute it and bring it back to something positive, and take that power that has motivated you to want to make a change, then we can make the change for the better, and be consciously correct in making that change for the better.
Yeah. And I think things are really moving in that direction at a really fast rate.
Well, they are definitely moving in that direction.
Well, for instance, I saw on the news the other evening, one of the things that has been kind of unethical, in my opinion, is all the banks going in and foreclosing on people's homes. Well, I love the fact that the Occupy movement is getting word about, and this is not happening in every community, but it is happening more and more, where they'll get word of a house that's just about to be foreclosed on, and they move their tents into the person's front yard, and they make a circle around the home, and They read the people's rights, because the people may not know that they have any rights. And then they just kind of hang out with the people who are being foreclosed on, and they just are feeling empowered by these
right.
people who care about them. They care about them.
Well, that's why in the book I talk
mm-hmm.
about all these concepts, because when we start to take our power back, when we start to take 100% responsibility for our lives, when we start to relating to people and realizing that it is somebody's life and allow them and accept them to be who they are, as long as they're not hurting anyone
mm-hmm.
or as long as they're not bringing that vibration of hurt to the planet. So, you know, this is the whole point of the book, is really there's principles in the book that when you start to live these principles, it's going to raise your vibration to a higher love nature. And, you know, any movements or anything to come, when we start to do this and when we start to realize our consciousness and make steps to say, okay, people have to live, people have human dignity, and people are divine, and start working from that point of view of divine, then we can collectively work to change and empower the planet. And this is what the whole book is about. This is what, you know, doing workshops and what my life is becoming about, because
mm-hmm.
it's really about me taking my purpose. You know, one of the first workshops I believe I'm going to do, and probably in January or February, is create a workshop on wordsmithing in the healing power of love,
mm-hmm.
and just, you know, just lead people and show people how they can just change their life just by working with these words, incorporating them in their vocabulary. And
mm-hmm.
so when we start to do this, you know, for me it's really about giving people the tools to empower themselves. And so when people have the tools to empower themselves, then they, you know, they can go out and fish. You know, it's like the
mm-hmm.
old cliche, provide a man a fish dinner, he's going to eat well that night. Teach a man to fish, and he'll be able to provide that dinner for himself and his family and for others. And it's the same thing spiritually. Yes, okay, I could talk to somebody, coach somebody, and bring them comfort in a minute, but if they start to then take the tools that went behind that coaching in that, and start to learn the tools and apply them to their life, this is where the real power becomes, because now I'm sharing information with people that allows them to empower themselves.
Right. It's a beautiful service. And it's, yeah, you could really help people to speak a whole new language is really what it comes down to.
Right, and it's also really helping myself.
Yeah,
and so
it
when
is.
I'm transforming myself, then I'm transforming other, helping other people to transform. But
you're teaching what it is you want to learn.
Yeah, the whole idea is to become an example.
So that
when people see that, they realize that there are certain paradoxes, you know, that the greatest hypocrisy is that we go against our spiritual nature and realize, and we don't act as spiritual beings. And when we start to realize that and overcome that particular hypocrisy, then we're going to change our consciousness, and nobody
mm-hmm.
can do it for you, each and every individual. You know, there's a song by Phil Perry, and it goes like this. This one and that one, each one, is God's gift to the world. And when we realize that everybody we encounter is God's gift to the world, and treat that person with the spiritual dignity they deserve, we will transform the planet.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a beautiful way to end the show, because we've just come to the end, Michael.
Okay. Well, thank
you
so much for Kate for allowing me to get my ideas out and to share this with all the listeners out there.
And your book is going to be published when?
The book should be out in about 3 weeks.
Right.
If you go to my website, www.michaelrobincollins.com, you know, I'll have information up on the website. I'll have information about what I'm doing. You can join the newsletter and, you know, let's do things and let's work together to make Earth the heart and make it the center of love and make our life here the most powerful and blessed event, moment by moment.
That's a beautiful prayer. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a great evening.
You too.
I'm going to play some more music here, so...